do the social media thing. And let's get this bill to the floor for a vote.
Alaskans rally for Medicaid expansion and against education cuts. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Walker describes his relationship with the legislature.
Some describe it as a rocky relationship, and you know, this is my first relationship with him. I think we're getting along fine.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Alaska Public Media is inviting all Alaskans to join our online, real-time OVEE screening and chat about the film The Homestretch, Friday, April 17th from 12 to 1 p.m. Just log in at alaskapublic.org and click on the Homestretch banner.
Governor Bill Walker spoke at a rally today in favor of Medicaid expansion outside the Capitol in Juneau. As KSKA's Zechariah Hughes reports, the event is another strategy from the administration to get lawmakers to bring the issue to a vote in the legislature.
Standing on the Capitol steps in an on-again, off-again drizzle, Annika Ord of Juneau said that as a recent college graduate, she falls into the coverage donut hole for health insurance that expanded Medicaid would fill. Then, she issued a very modern political call to arms.
Medicaid expansion would help young people like myself who are getting their financial feet on the ground and want to live and work here in Alaska. So snap a picture, text it, tweet it, Facebook it, do the social media thing, and let's get this bill to the floor for a vote.
That prompted many of the 100 or so rally attendees, along with a handful of Democratic lawmakers, to begin snapping selfies. Governor Bill Walker told the crowd expanded health care coverage is both an economic and moral necessity for the state.
Multiple polls that have come out in the last weeks, multiple polls all show an overwhelming support for accepting expanded Medicaid. Health care is not a partisan issue. Health care is an Alaskan issue, and we're going to accept it.
But Republicans say the state isn't ready. During a majority press briefing earlier in the day, House Republican Stephen Thompson of Fairbanks says there's no use expanding Medicaid when the current Medicaid program isn't working.
But to throw another 20,000 plus people into a system that is already not functioning properly could really hurt the state a lot. I mean, we've got to be careful that we have things that are going to work before we start adding 20 to 40,000 people to a system that's broken.
Thompson doesn't think the issue will come to a vote this session, but Governor Walker says he will call back the legislature if the expansion plan doesn't come to pass. Juneau resident Pat Sidmore attended the rally and says the politics are obscuring the very real need to give health coverage to more low-income Alaskans.
My sign said that when elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers, and it's just, again, it's not a partisan issue. We have a unified government, a Republican governor, a Republican legislature. That's the elephant symbol, and they're fighting over this thing, and people are getting hurt.
After his rally speech, the crowd of supporters started singing Walker Happy Birthday. He turned 64. With help from APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez, I'm Zachariah Hughes in Juneau.
With the legislature scheduled to gavel out by midnight on Sunday, Governor Bill Walker has seen very few pieces of legislation make it to his desk. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez sat down with Walker yesterday afternoon to get his take on how the session is progressing. Walker said he thinks it's still possible for lawmakers to get their work done on time.
Well, I'm the eternal optimist, so, you know, there's still time on the clock. I've seen a lot of things happen very quickly in the last few days, so we'll see. I mean, as we get closer to the end, it becomes probably less probable that all the things will get through, but we'll see.
What do you feel needs to go through before you call a special session?
Well, I certainly want to see Medicaid expansion. I mean, there's no question about that. We've submitted legislation with reform and expansion as the package as they've asked, so that's certainly something I want to see happen. The second is I certainly want the Interior Energy Project to be to go through as well in as similar form as it started off as possible.
So if neither of those move, could we see a special session with those two items?
Is it a possibility? It absolutely is.
And would you want to do that immediately, or do you think there should be some sort of cool down period?
Where, you know, that would be evaluated as far as what's the, you know, what makes most sense. So that decision has not been made yet.
Mm-hmm. And I guess how would you describe your relationship with the legislature right now?
I think it's fine. You know, sometimes some describe it as a rocky relationship, and you know, this is my first relationship with them. I think we're getting along fine. We meet here all the time. We met this morning at 7:30. We'll meet again on Friday. As far as with the legislative leadership, or at least with the Speaker and Senate President, we've had, you know, probably five or six meetings. I think we're getting along fine.
A lot of money was cut out of education with the operating budget and some in the capital budget as well. Are you happy with the state of the budget as it is right now with the legislature?
I'm not. I think that the education cuts went too far. I think that we were not comfortable going to $32.5 million on our own. Another 47.5 on top of that really, I felt, went too far. So I'm hoping that at least some of that comes back in that they've taken out on the education. Mm-hmm. Other areas of concern on the budget, Alaska Marine Highway System, when we're cutting out. One area will not have ferry service for, I believe, a month this fall. The Alaska Marine Highway System, the operative word in that is highway, and it is their highway. And so I think we need to be careful about when we're, you know, cutting back on some things. We can deal with that, but when we're completely cutting out service, I'm concerned about that.
Since 2008, the state has been in litigation with the native village of Tinunek over the fate of a young girl whose parental rights were terminated. The state has held that because the girl's grandmother did not file formal adoptive paperwork, she lost the preference she would have been granted under the Indian Child Welfare Act. Now Governor Walker has rolled out emergency regulations that seek to prevent situations like this in the future. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports that the action is a win for Native groups in the state.
With Julie Kitka, the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, by his side, Walker announced at a press conference that the state would make it easier for Alaska Native children to remain with extended family or with tribal members in adoption cases.
We are going as far as we can with emergency regulations up to the statutory limitations now.
With the way the Indian Child Welfare Act works, those groups get preference when it comes to adoption. But as it stands now, they have to exercise that right through prescribed application notices and legal proceedings. That's not always easy in Native villages where there usually aren't any attorneys. Health Commissioner Val Davidson tried to convey just how challenging the whole process is by asking reporters questions in Yupik.
Kitaki, mahun.
After 2 seconds of silence, she went on.
I asked you in Yupik, if you're a person who wants to step forward, come now. Now is the time. Now is the only time that you can do that. That's what families face in Alaska every day.
Under the new regulations, which are effective immediately, individuals that get a custody preference would be able to express their intent to adopt a child in need of aid in less formal ways. They could do it in person, over the phone, or even just by mail or email. The administration also drafted a bill that would put those rules into statute. If the legislation passes next year, it would make the policy more likely to hold in future administrations. Julie Kitka, the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, thanked the governor for the change and said it signified a shift in relations between the state and tribes. She said the new rules would have a noticeable impact on families.
It's real and impacts children in our state today.
But it won't affect one child. At the same time the administration is changing its stance on adoption cases, it is staying firm in its position in the Tinunek litigation, which was one of the reasons for the regulatory change in the first place. On Wednesday, the same day that the regulations were signed, Attorney General Designee Craig Richards filed a brief in the Tinunek case that went against the village's desires. The state held its position that a child's grandmother lost her adoption preference when she did not give a formal notice that she wanted to take the girl in. Walker does not think that is inconsistent, saying the regulations cannot be applied retroactively.
We can't rewrite what was in place at that time when that circumstances came up. We can rewrite the future.
The plaintiffs in the case remain committed to a rehearing. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
More than 1,200 Alaskans have signed a petition asking Governor Walker to withdraw Alaska's support for a brief defending same-sex marriage bans. The Attorney General signed the brief 2 weeks ago. The NAACP, Christians for Equality, and Alaskans Together for Equality all signed the petition. Comments support equality for all citizens. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments about the constitutionality of such bans on April 28th. They'll issue a final decision by this summer. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell defends her record on Alaska issues.
I think if you look at our actions in Alaska, you will see that we are actually facilitating safe and responsible development.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Searchers have found the remains of the pilot of a plane that went missing in Alaska's Prince William Sound. The Coast Guard says the man's remains were recovered after being found Wednesday evening. Responders say the wreckage of the man's Cessna 180 were partially submerged off the coast of Culrose Island. Anchorage station KTUU reports the pilot's family identified him as 53-year-old Dale Carlson of Wasilla. The search was launched after the pilot reported engine trouble Tuesday afternoon near Perry Island, 60 miles southwest of Valdez. The Coast Guard says the pilot stated he might have to set the plane down. The Coast Guard says the searchers included Alaska State Troopers and the National Guard. Coast Guard says responders searched for 27 hours in rough weather. FBI staff were in Bethel recently on a fact-finding mission related to an incident in which a former Bethel police officer arrested a man in a parking lot of an AC store. An FBI spokesperson says they are looking at a possible civil rights violation. It's not an official investigation in the terms used by the FBI, but the spokesperson says they are looking into the incident after surveillance video surfaced earlier this month. The U.S. Attorney's Office can use information from the FBI to decide whether or not to press charges. The Bethel police officer, Andrew Reed, was fired this spring. Following the release of the video, the attorney for Wassily Gregory, the man who was arrested, has filed for post-conviction relief on his guilty plea to a harassment charge. City Manager Ann Capella referred questions to an attorney working for the city, Bill Ingleson. He declined to comment, citing the ongoing investigation and a desire to not interfere in the due process of individuals. The City Council on Tuesday night, however, briefly heard from Ingleson about the videotape in question. There have been many questions about whether the hard drive containing the video had been erased. When asked by Councilmember Zach Fansler about the video, Ingleson insisted there was no nefarious activity and that there were several copies made of the video.
There's absolutely no evidence at all, and it's just not true that anything was destroyed. Copies were made of that, and in fact, the attorney for the other person involved in this, not the police officer, but the other person, that attorney looked at the video in my office, and so nothing was hidden from anyone.
There appeared to be confusion about who actually owned the hard drive. Ingleson says the police returned the hard drive to AC in the condition they received it. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell today defended the federal government's land management and brushed off calls from legislators in Alaska and other states to seize federal lands. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports from Washington.
Jewell spoke at the Center for American Progress, a liberal think tank, to a standing room only crowd, many from a nearby conference of the outdoor recreation industry. It was a room strongly in favor of preserving federal land. Jewell urged them to make their views known at every level of government.
These are lands that belong to all American people. Just because they're in the boundary of a state does not mean they belong to the residents of that state. They belong to all American people.
The Alaska House last week passed a bill demanding the federal government turn over its lands in Alaska to the state. Similar measures have passed in other western states. Speaker of the Alaska House Mike Chenault, like other Republican legislators, says it's a just cause.
I'm not afraid of a fight. I'm not afraid of doing what I think is right.
Jewell doesn't sound too worried.
While there has been a fair amount of rhetoric and even some laws passed in state legislatures, there's none of them that have been found to be constitutional with regard to a takeover of federal public lands by states. So there's a lot of talk, but there hasn't been a lot of action.
The talk in Alaska grew louder this winter when the Obama administration announced a series of anti-development measures in the state. They include withdrawing areas of the offshore Arctic from oil and gas lease sales and recommending Congress protect the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as wilderness. Alaska's top officials blew a gasket. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski said the Obama administration was trying to keep Alaska as a pretty snow globe no one can touch. Jewell, after her speech, bristled at the suggestion she's locking up Alaska.
I think if you look at our actions in Alaska, you will see that we are actually facilitating safe and responsible development, recognizing that in a place like the Arctic, nobody wants to screw that up.
Jewell says most of the mining in Alaska is on federal land. She pointed to her department's work with Shell on permits to drill in the Chukchi Sea. Plus, she says, they've allowed oil development in the National Petroleum Reserve, although with conditions some Alaskans say are onerous. Jewell says she's sympathetic to Alaska's budget woes, but she says it's wrong to blame the federal government. The problem is oil prices, the secretary says, and Alaska's dependence on that one commodity.
I do think that if I was in Governor Walker's situation, I'd be looking to diversify my sources of revenue for the state.
With the Alaska legislature set to adjourn Sunday, that doesn't look likely. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The price of Brent crude hit above $63 a barrel today, the highest it's been this year. That gives Alaskans something to cheer about, but the head of the U.S. Energy Information Administration told a Senate panel today two political events on the horizon would likely bring the global price down. Adam Siminski says if Iranian sanctions are removed, a lot of oil would come onto the market, and no one knows if that would be gradual or all at once. Siminski says Iran has about 30 million barrels of oil in storage, and it would likely increase its production rate if it's not facing sanctions.
So the total amount would be about 1 million barrels a day of production coming onto the market. And it's really hard to see right now, Senator, how that could be absorbed without causing either other production to go down or the price to go down.
Siminski was answering a question posed by Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. Senators from non-producing states tend to focus on gasoline prices. Siminski refuted the claim that allowing crude oil exports would raise the price at the American pump.
What that does suggest is if more crude oil enters the global markets, whether it's from U.S. exports or from Iran or from production anywhere, it would tend to lower the global oil price, which would tend to lower gasoline prices in the U.S.
Lifting the oil export ban is one of Murkowski's major initiatives as chairman of the Senate Energy Committee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has denied an emergency motion for an injunction that would have delayed the Big Thorn timber sale pending an appeal of a lower court ruling. Thursday's denial was the latest action related to the Big Thorn timber sale on Prince of Wales Island. The U.S. Forest Service last summer made a final decision to move forward with the project, which includes about 6,000 acres of old-growth rainforest. Environmentalists arguing that its critical habitat for deer and wolves quickly sued to stop the timber sale. Lawsuits were filed in federal court by two separate coalitions of conservation groups. This spring, U.S. District Court Judge Ralph Beislein rejected all the arguments brought forward by the environmental groups and ruled in favor of the Forest Service. That court had consolidated the two lawsuits, but each set appealed separately to the Ninth Circuit. In today's ruling, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals also agreed to consolidate the appeals into one case and to expedite the appeals process. More than 150 high school students walked out of class this afternoon to attend an impromptu rally in downtown Anchorage. They are protesting the legislature's proposed $47.5 million cut to education. KSKA's Ann Hillman stopped by.
West High junior Charlie Lowell led the crowd, sending a message to Alaska's state legislature.
They've been encouraged to even cut education further. So we're here today to let them know that they can't cut away our future. They can't take our education away from us.
Lowell helped organize the protest through word of mouth and didn't let parents or teachers know until the last minute. Students at the protest say their teachers had mixed reactions. Many supported the idea, but others were skeptical that any students would actually show up. West High sophomore Tessa Mino.
I think in general, teenagers get a bad rap for being rebellious and like idiots. And we truly do know what's going on, and we're not oblivious to what's happening.
West High 10th grader Joseph Mazak says they need to speak up to protect what they love.
I love going to school. I love participating in school events, and you know, I play baseball for West, and you know, I just don't want to see that go away just because of, you know, money.
The legislature needs to send their final budget to the governor by the end of session on Sunday. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Juneau School District wants a special June election, asking voters to approve a bond for school renovations before a law stopping state reimbursements for school construction takes effect. The governor still hasn't signed the bill, but if he does, the school district has 90 days before it becomes a law to hold an election. Even if all goes smoothly and the district beats the countdown, it's still unclear if it will get reimbursed. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
The Marie Drake Building was built in 1965 as a junior high school. Now it houses Yakuske Dakahiti Alternative High School, Montessori Borealis, and some district offices.
It's very difficult to teach science in a classroom that has one sink that is as old as the building, that works most of the time, but not all the time.
That's Raya Waldern. She's the science teacher at Yakuske Dakahiti, which doesn't have any lab facilities. So projects like
dissections, we do different squid and fish dissections. We also teach a really incredible forensics class where it can get pretty messy because we're doing different blood splatter analysis.
All of that is done in a normal classroom.
And my floors and the lights are original to the building. And when the students upstairs in Montessori are doing their really fun activities, our lights shake and it's very loud. And I'm glad they're having fun up there, but it can be a little distracting when we're taking notes and things like that.
Getting proper science labs for both the high school and Montessori is part of renovation plans for Marie Drake. Other improvements include the heating and ventilation system, lighting, and general updates to learning spaces. The school district would ask voters to approve about $21 million in bond debt. The district has been working on the capital improvement process for the past few years. Originally, the district planned to have it on the normal election ballot in October, but that would be too late if Senate Bill 64 becomes law. With the state currently reimbursing up to 70% of a school construction bond, Superintendent Mark Miller says a lot's at stake.
There's $14 million on the table, and if we don't get an election in the next 90 days, that $14 million is gone. I mean, it's gone forever.
The bill would stop the state's school debt reimbursement program for 5 years, at which point the program would be brought back at a lower reimbursement level. With the state facing a multi-billion dollar deficit, Miller says he understands the legislature wanting to be fiscally solvent, but he also wants to protect the Juneau School District.
The law is the law. The law is clear about when bills take effect, and we have every right to do what's legally acceptable in order to do what's best for our kids.
Elizabeth Noodleman is head of school finance and facilities for the Alaska Department of Education. She says the department hasn't received a completed application for Marie Drake debt reimbursement from the Juneau School District.
If they have their application reviewed as eligible by the department, if the voters approve the project, and if the sale of the bonds is in compliance, and the procurement and design and reporting is in compliance, then they would move through the system for reimbursement.
But Noodleman says even if the state enters into a contract with the district, nothing is guaranteed if the bill becomes law.
There's language in the contract around future events that could happen or could not happen. And any funding for construction programs, it always is based on the legislature appropriating funds. So I think that there's a lot of questions out there that really would need to be solidified to come up with a final answer.
Laura Pierre is chief of staff to Senator Anna McKinnon, co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, which sponsored the bill.
I would be very surprised if the Department of Education approved any application at this point, knowing what the legislature's intent is.
Still, Juneau Representative Sam Keto III thinks it's a smart move for the district to try to enter into a legal contract with the state.
It appears as though there will be some gray area, but any contracts entered into between now and when the bill actually takes effect should be valid.
And Keto says it'll be hard for the legislature to undermine that contract. Governor Bill Walker's press secretary says the governor is still reviewing the bill. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes and Lisa Fu in Juneau, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Premier Dental Group. Smiles for Life is an annual campaign going on now through June for seriously ill, disabled, and underprivileged children. More at smilealaska.com. Raven Alaska, providing business travel needs in over 100 communities across the state. Find more at flyraven.com.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Alaska Public Media invites Alaskans to our statewide online screening and chat in real time about the film The Homestretch and Homeless Teens, Friday, April 17th from 12 to 1 p.m. To join our conversation, go to alaskapublic.org and click on the Homestretch banner. Lori Townsend, News Director of Alaska Public Media, is our moderator, who will be joined with panelists from across the state. See you online Friday, April 17th, starting at 12 p.m.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.